Ae inu vai ava ava e vivo ole a hokupa a ohe hope ho i mai ai
ana i vale no kako kau ko e mau i ke ala au e ke aloha ole a kamalihini
uha a
heo.
If you cannot hum, whistle. If you cannot do either or, just sit down.
Ooh, la, he,
and uncle struggling or that.
Hello, everybody. This is Carlita, and I'm here speaking to my friend Dr. Three Rivers in Hawaii. And we're going to talk about some interesting things today, including the crisis in Lahaina, where Dr. Three Rivers has visited. And we'll talk about the goal of this podcast and what he needs to gather some help and support and resources to help the people and the crisis situation there and turn this around so that it becomes an empowerment to the people. We'll start by introducing Dr. Three Rivers. So, Dr. Three Rivers, hello. How are you doing over there today?
Oh, it's a beautiful day here in Hawaii, as you can see.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks amazing. So tell us a little bit about what you do and what you've been up to the last week.
Yes, I went to the island of Maui last week, Wednesday, and saw the devastation in Lahaina. And I got a little different picture than most people are seeing because I'm a doctor. Yeah, medicine, and also have a doctorate in international law. So I'm looking at the whole situation there from two different perspectives as to the negligent homicide from the standpoint of law, the roads that were blocked, the power that got turned off and on at the wrong times, no sirens coming on at the right time to warn people. School buses missing, listening to people talk about, the winds and, having to spend up to 8 hours in the water when they were told by civil defense to run to the ocean when they should have been told to run to the mountain. They ran into the fire and had longer time at the fire rather than running away from the wind and the smoke. And so, I saw those things as a judge of the Indigenous Nations, the Federation of Indigenous Nations. And then I saw the tremendous radiation poisoning when I was diagnosing the people. I got samples of their hair and drops of the blood to diagnose in my lab back there in Hilo. So I was there for 2 days and saw carnage, a precursor to Armageddon. I saw very similar things that I saw from the photographs and the videos of 9/11. Buildings, dust, cars 7 blocks away from the trade towers that were burned, just like the cars, a spitting image of the cars right there in the home. Just unbelievable.
May I ask you a question? What do you make of the boats that also caught fire on this scene?
The fact that the boats caught on fire also, they were so far away from the land, and the fact that other boats from the civil defense and from the Coast Guard, it doesn't take them 8 hours to get there. Helicopters, the absence of helicopters from the army itself, the Coast Guard, National Guard, just a total, it was like it was all planned ahead of time.
Okay, so what you're saying is the Coast Guard, the military, the helicopters, everybody that's supposed to be available and on emergencies like this just took over 8 hours to get to the site?
Yes. I've seen pretty good videos of the boat captains in the dark because there was so much smoke, trying to shine a light, which wouldn't go very far in all the smoke, trying to find people. And these guys are crying because they have children and families, trying to huddle together and stay afloat. Some were up against the shore and the rocks, huddled in the rocks, trying to cover their mouths with their t-shirts or whatever they could find so they could at least breathe. That tremendous heat and wind, and the heat from the wind, it just sucks your breath away, that much heat, trying to get oxygen and trying to put your head under the water for a minute to get cool. I mean, just if you can imagine being in that yourself and trying to live through that with your children. Roads being blocked, they got no exit because the exits were blocked by the police force. Your only exit at that point in time is to go run to the water. Leave your vehicle, run to the water if you can, get in the water. And for that to go on for that length of time, it's just unforgivable by the authorities. The authorities are even blocking, after the fact, supplies coming from other people.
Sorry, say that again. The authorities were blocking
the supplies other people are bringing, groceries and tents, clothing, not being allowed. I mean, it was like they were trying to hide something, the people in power, the corporations.
Okay.
Some rumors that some of these Red Cross workers were just IRS, not IRS, CIA, the three-letter people dressed up as Red Cross workers. There was some mention of altercations between the people trying to bring in supplies and the Army Corps of Engineers that were supposed to be there helping after the fire was out and the wind blowing that dust around, people getting mad in their lungs. And one of the patients I treated, he just can't stop coughing, and he can't cough anything up. His lungs are so congested. He's got such pain in his back because his cough muscles and his abdominal muscles are just wore out. And he knows enough. He doesn't trust Western medicine. He knows what they might do. So he was one of the main people I treated there, filled with radiation pulse, from what I could detect and what I got when I brought his samples back to my lab to be diagnosed. So where did all that radiation come from? Do we really have a dew weapon there? A directed weapon, a concentrated laser it was interesting to see one blue car surrounded by other cars that were toast. And right next to them was, in the middle, was this blue vehicle, pretty much untouched because they used a blue laser. I saw photographs of blue big umbrellas at restaurants. The restaurant was burned and the things around it, but the blue umbrellas were still intact.
Mm-hmm. And there's a famous picture of a green trash bin, a plastic trash bin in front of where there was a house. And there's trees around the house, this trash bin, which is supposed to melt in, you know, that kind of heat, you know, because a heat of a normal fire is different to any other heat. If it's a laser beam type of heat, like a directed energy weapon, it has a different consistency and dynamic, right? So it doesn't make sense why a plastic bin or why all the trees around these houses and vehicles survived. I think there was a great interview that was shared before about the arborist who went and did some analysis. What else did you see there that indicated that this is something more than just a normal fire, other than what you were describing, you know, how strange it was that items of the color blue did not burn?
Yes, and I also was shown pictures from a cell phone of a tree burning from the inside out.
Wow.
Now, that only happens when we have a plasma fire where the laser beam hits the ground. It bounces back at about 5 to 10 times the same power that hit the ground with, kind of like a fission reaction. It follows up the roots of the tree in the water, and that the tree starts burning from the inside out. Well, that was another telltale sign that there's something very unusual going on here that the news media are not covering, and are maybe covering up. So I brought a lot of things that most people have seen because of my legal background and because of my doctoring, the things I do in healing. I'm not seeing normal symptoms. These are abnormal symptoms of radiation at a very high level. Lung problems caused by radiation and dust and debris. And I also picked up with one person so far, he had a petrochemical accelerant in his blood, in his urine.
Say that again, so a petrochemical what?
Based accelerant, something they would use to accelerate a fire.
Accelerant.
Like pouring gasoline on a fire.
Okay.
Some people saw 2 days before the fire, for 2 days, they saw kind of a mist, light fog in the air, in the area, in the hind.
So they like this could have been a sort of a chemical conductor or primer, right?
Yes. I also saw cell phone footage of a fire dancing on pavement. Like something in
fire there. Dancing on the pavement.
Yes, yes. And the other person that was trying to read it, get away from there. It's going to catch you on fire. Because on this pavement where he was videoing, the fire was moving close to him between the wind and maybe possibly an accelerant in the air, carrying, because this accelerant would be in the grass, would be in the wood. Blue laser beams would be heating up metals. I got the feeling from looking at the cars that the metals in the cars didn't actually burn, they melted. It got so hot, the melting lit up the upholstery. Then the upholstery caught on fire. We actually had footage of aluminum hubcaps melting. Now that temperature is twice as high to melt aluminum as it would be in a grass fire or even a wood fire.
So what is the temperature of a normal forest fire?
I think it's fucking at 1500 degrees. Metal melts at twice that, like 2000 degrees. So what would happen if your house was built with wooden nails and the nails started melting? Would it light up the wood that the nails were in? Would the fire have, houses have burned like a tree from the inside out? Would the car have maybe, because the engine is aluminum and it's a bigger, would the engine have started melting and got hotter quicker? The other odd thing was when I was moving around in the vehicle, I had my Geiger pump, my gauze meter, and right in the vehicle, the closer I got my Geiger counter, my meter to the engine, the higher the meter reading would go.
The higher the...
Reading on my Geiger counter would go. The person who was driving the car, he kept shaking his hands. He says, boy, I've got some kind of neuropathy. Something's affecting my neurology. I feel like my hands are going to sleep. So that was another odd thing. So it's got some problems from the past with neuropathy, but this was more concentrated. So, yeah, because I had my equipment, my meters, my education, I picked up more things, more interesting coincidences, maybe. All those coincidences come together and tell a story, I believe, that has yet to be told. So I'm very concerned that they're putting up fences 10 foot high with black mesh plastic screening to keep people from taking videos. You have to have permit to go in. Every place I stopped to get a reading, there was a police car there blocking the place. You can't even pull off the road and get a meter reading or take pictures because the police will arrest you. So I was not able to get things that I wanted to get. Some people that were residents were able to, they did get me pieces of glass, melted aluminum, dust that I brought back to analyze, pieces of burnt vehicles to check the radiation poisoning. Radiation at resonance within those pieces. So I'm still in the process of analyzing those things, along with keeping up with my normal patient load after I came back. So I really need help in training people to treat how I treat there from the Ohio. I spent 3 hours there speaking with doctors, massage therapists that know the body, that I could teach them how to be a medicine man, how to use the lasers that I use to diagnose and treat people, how I use a med bed that I developed. So we're looking at gathering other indigenous nations to provide funds. We already have over probably a few $1 trillion collected through years to help rebuild Lahaina. Comes from the Federation of Indigenous Nations that we can use to hire a de jure sheriff, not somebody paid by the corporation that runs everything, that they could also hire a separate coroner to go in and protect the evidence that was found there. We also have the law that where there are bones buried, everything has to stop until archaeologists can come in and assess where the bones are, how old they are, why they died, how they died. The people are starting to not trust FEMA so much. maybe even the Red Cross so much, the Army Corps of Engineers, because of the stories we're hearing about the FBI, the CIA. There's a lot of questions on the people's minds here in Hawaii, and particularly Maui, Hawaii. Where are these children? We've got maybe 1,000 missing children.
So let's just get to that for a second. Before we do, you said that you were trying to take radiation readings at the area, but you were not able to get out of the car and do that because you would get arrested. I mean, that in itself it doesn't seem legal that you should be arrested. You know, you're making these studies, you're doing the research, and you're not doing anything wrong. Aside from that, yes. People should have the right to go back to their homes. Aside from that, people should have the right to go back to their homes and salvage whatever they can from the leftovers of their property, right? These things are strange indeed.
But even miles away, where other fires had got started, there were police officers blocking those areas also. I was not able to stop. I mean, there's nothing there but burned grass and some trees.
Okay.
Well, maybe the vehicle was parked under the tree, who knows, but even those areas, I was not able to stop and make any readings, gauze readings. So there's something being hidden, in my humble opinion, there. Something that.
Were you able to get any soil samples? Samples of burned pieces of objects or anything around you? Did you get any environmental samples at all?
No, most of my stuff's going to come from people at Ground Zero that breathed in the dust.
Right.
And were right there in all the radiation that was, in fact, I do reckon their bodies can carry that footprint. Their blood will carry the footprint of any chemicals that are odd, that I shouldn't find present in the body. Air samples will also tell me about heavy metals that I may find an excess amount of. Now, you got to realize that these people just went through 3 years of a flamendemic. Of a C-19 scare tactics, get your shot. So I probably will find a lot of heavy metals from the graphene oxide that was given to the people that got the shots. Mm-hmm. Now you pile on top of that the other chemicals and radiation coming from the fire. C-19 is basically a respiratory problem. It was affecting people's lungs, sinuses. So now people have got their lungs filled with smoke and who knows whatever else in their environment. And so now you've got a double whammy. And I've got to get back there next week if I can afford it and work with some more people, get some more samples, find a place to set up a triage where people can come and give me a urine sample. Do a physical, let me take some pictures of the conditions. Let me look at your tongue. You know, all those things are signs, you know.
So you're able to tell with your expert knowledge what the radiation poisoning is and the effects of that. So that in itself is evidence enough. With that, going back to what you were saying about the children, the missing children, what do you know about that, and how many people are supposed to be missing, and what's being done about it? What is the missing person list, and how many people are supposedly dead, and where do these missing children come in?
Yes. Okay. Along with that, There's some, we'll call it a rumor for now, that the neighboring island, the closest one, they found bodies of the people that died in the water because the heat was so hot they couldn't get enough air, or they couldn't tread water long enough. So we've got those type of missing things. So we don't know about that. Well, that may be even covered up. We have up to 7 missing buses, school buses.
7 busloads of children, right?
Yes. So one part of that story is, well, we had to evacuate a bunch of tourists. So we'll find those buses at the airport. Well, why are we still at the airport? Why didn't you use those buses to get the people out of Lahaina? Why did you use them just to get rid of the tourists out of that area, not knowing where the fire would go? Well, and that was only maybe 7 out of, there were like 20 buses at the parking garage for buses that could have been used to evacuate people from the fire. So that's a good question that you ask. Yeah. There's a lot of investigation needs to go on there, because the police officer was just hired not that long ago from Las Vegas. He was hired over top of 4 other police officers there on the island. People have been in Hawaii. The law that you can't be a police officer unless you've been in Hawaii for 1 year was changed by the governor just weeks before the fellow in Nevada was hired, who I think was a part of the cover-up of the hotel shootings there, at the MGM hotel, maybe there in Nevada, Las Vegas. That was very questionable. People shooting out of hotel windows, down at the crowd, on the ground. What was that all about? How does he become a police officer?
That reminds me, sorry to interject, that reminds me of something else that you probably know about, that was a talk by somebody at a school regarding legislations that had changed just weeks before the crisis. Emergency operations and legislations changed just before the crisis. What do you know about that?
Well, that's very unusual, because most of those types of emergency legislations come out after the disaster. To have them come out before the disaster is like you're a planning something. You're setting some things in place. It was a good idea because that's such a tinderbox to do some things, but it was the magnitude of the legislation that came out, as well as the odd areas that were changed. So it's like you knew ahead of time. That legislation didn't so much come from a body of legislature, pretty much come from the executive branch of government, from 1 or 2 people. The hiring of the sheriff was recommended by a committee. They unanimously voted for this chair to be hired, is my understanding. That's another odd, that to forego in another experience that Hawaiian insurance.
So it makes no sense. Why not hire locals who know the islands very well, who know the communities, to help look for 7 missing buses? That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. How can they go missing on an island?
The other thing is, Maui is a county. Most counties have sheriffs. In Hawaii, you have 1 sheriff for all of the counties, and all of the different counties have police chiefs and police officers to run the whole island. And he is appointed. There's something bad, really illegal about that. I think, like Deb Hodges mentioned in his, that's totally the balance of powers is gone because it's the coroner. The only person that can arrest the sheriff is the coroner. And the only person that can arrest the coroner is the sheriff. So there's a balance of power there.
Yes, but absolutely. A big conflict of interest there and totally not justified.
Call it the Drum, Awakening the First Nations.
A teacher, a third grade teacher from the burned down King Kamehameha III Elementary in Lahaina. And I am testifying on my concerns of the governor's emergency proclamation that happened 3 weeks prior to the fire and how it suspended seven state statutes, of which exonerated everything that you guys are in charge of, covers county organization administration, chapter 46, collective bargaining was rescinded, school impact fees, collective bargaining was rescinded, and to my knowledge, this was the first emergency proclamation in the country that didn't have a preceding incident. Normally, it's like a hurricane, boom, we got an emergency proclamation. But this was just, from my knowledge, was just to streamline development on Maui, and it is allocated all decision-making power to one person, the housing officer of the governor, Nani Medeiros, who's unelected, who can trump every single thing that you do and everything that you say and every item that we cover without any input from the community, without any public discourse, without sunshine law.
We are a voice for the Federation of Indigenous Nations. We call upon all, awakening the First Nations.
So what is being done about these missing children? How many children are estimated to be missing, and what are they doing about looking for these buses? What are they doing?
The people are relying upon the government to find their children. And the government is being real silent and quiet about their investigation within it. So we've had 2,000 plus children enrolled for school. It's the only way we've been trying to get a feeling of how many children in that Lahaina area were available. And my understanding is, we can only account for 1,000 approximately of those children.
So there's over 1,000 children missing and nobody is doing anything about it.
Well, not that there's any concern about it. The superintendent of schools has been on the news media a couple of times and he's been putting numbers out. But he never mentioned that there's, I think, about 300 boarding school children that are there from the very rich, that the rich people send to Hawaii to be educated there in Lahaina. So they have places to live, cabins off campus. And there's another a group of children also there that have to be put into the mix of people, the children mix, have to be accompanied. So here we are a month later, and over a month later, and we still have all these unanswered questions. The bus drivers, who are the bus drivers that ran these buses? What's their story?
That's a very good question.
Somebody needs to interview them. Were they late? Were the bus drivers not called in? Were they CIA people? Who were the bus drivers there that were busing people around at that point in time? Why would they sit home from school if in fact they were and put on buses when the safest place for the children to be would be in the school? Because those teachers know you might be sending the kids home where both parents were, and they're just home alone. And that the house is catching fire from the inside out.
Exactly. It just doesn't make sense. Where were they supposed to be heading with these buses? It doesn't make sense.
No. So the school has a tremendous liability.
Yes. So what are the schools saying about it?
Well, I am the Federation of Indigenous Nations, and the Hawaiian Nation is here, not the corporation. The Hawaiian Nation people outside the corporation had recently filed, after the fire, a lien against the government, against the corporate state of Hawaii, against anybody complicit being a part of this. It's a no-brainer. All the evidence is there. This is negligence. This is negligence homicide. So it was a good thing we did that. So we plan on using that money from that lien to help with the rebuilding. That's where that trillions of dollars that I mentioned has came from. So we're tying up the corporate money from the corporate people who have occupied the Hawaiian Islands. When the Marines stepped off the boat back in 1880, and started occupying Hawaii, put the leaders of Hawaii in jail, and just took over the islands. So these people, for 130 years or more, have been under occupation by a corporation called the United States. So a bunch of Native American people throughout the world have come together under the Federation of Indigenous Nations. And we have filed the International Uniform Commercial Code liens against everybody that we...
You filed a... Could you be more clear on what you filed again so the listeners can hear?
Yes. Federation of Indigenous Nations that are centered and grounded. Their home office is in the Hawaiian Nation here in the Big Island of Hawaii. We put our heads together and filed a Uniform Commercial Code lien in an international database. We are now the secured party for the bonds of the governor, any bonds that the corporate state of Hawaii might have, any bonds that the corporate police chief deputies, maybe. We'll probably be including next the FEMA, because we're seeing what they're doing there. We think they may be covering things up. Maybe even the Red Cross, but with all the grief that's going on, we're starting to hold people responsible. We hope to have an international Nuremberg Type 2 tribunal in the near future to look at all the evidence and to look at the laws of genocide. President Ronald Reagan signed the law into effect in 1988 when he was president, specifically speaking to the genocide of Native American people in any of the 50 states, Guam, Puerto Rico. Anybody that tries to not just kill a Native American person or persons, or that would put a bioweapon into their community, or that would do anything to destroy their creed, their belief system, or anything to destroy their Native American lands, which is what we saw. We had lands destroyed. We had lives lost. It fits that genocide act that Senator Proxmire put before the Congress and Ronald Reagan signed into being. I don't think anybody's ever used that law before, but we are going to use it, I believe, here in the near future.
What do you need in terms of people and support for this tribunal?
Judges will come from the Cherokee Nation, the Chillicothe Nation in Canada, people from, like yourself, from Mexico, possibly. And we have a judge from England, I think New Zealand. We're looking at inviting those judges.
Amazonia, South America, we could get them in the South American Amazonians.
Yes. That's good. That's good. Yeah.
Ecuadorians, yeah. Very powerful indigenous.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, the gathering of the nations was called for under prophecy. That prophecy that came out of Alberta, Canada, a place called Deer Lake, Barry Wirsch said, in prophetic prophecy, he saw a mountain, and he heard a drum. And the drum, as the vision opened up, was being played by someone like a chief, all dressed up with the chief's headdress and the regalia of a Native American. And he could see that a giant was awakening on the mountain because he was hearing the drum. So we call it the prophecy of the call of the drum to gather the nations, to create a united nations that might even someday replace the UN that we see is becoming more and more corrupted, taking more and more power, taking more and more of the responsibility of inoculating the people of the world with an experimental. So well, the South American nations have very little voice in the United Nations.
That's right, so, they do. So this would be an opportunity for the Central and South American people to join in and unite and re-empower themselves in that global place, right?
So we have a similar prophecy that came out of Ireland, of all places, before the call of the drum, saying Hawaii has to come back to the Creator. We've got too many different religions here, from Japan, China, Puerto Rico, and that Hawaii will someday become a lighthouse. Well, that stands to reason. We're in the middle Pacific. Yeah, we're a big rock. So it could be a lighthouse. It also said they will be a beacon of hope to the other nations. So the Finns, Federation of Indigenous Nations, is we call prophecy keepers, because we have another large, similar prophecy from Australia. I can't think of her name, but she also prophesied something very similar to the call of the drum weeks after the call of the drum.
Yeah, so actually it's mirrored in many different cultures, that prophecy, in South American culture, in Native American as well, with the return of the White Raven and the Haidas. So it's, definitely a global phenomenon. So just going back to something that I think people who are listening here may or may not realize, but when you're talking about what happened at Lahaina and lasers And the evidence that keeps coming out there is that these are from satellites. Now, I just want to elaborate from that, because some people theorize that it could be Lockheed Martin remote controlled planes, but I just want to remind people that, you know, Elon Musk launched over 46,000 5G satellites in 2020, just before and while the pandemic took place. And there is a lot of evidence and research out there that every time we have a new technology and the radiation, the electromagnetic fields are being amplified, there's a very large flu pandemic. So that's one thing. But the second thing I want to talk about is that these 46,000 5G satellites are not just launched for our 5G communications. They are launched because they are military directed energy capable weapons satellites. Now, I'm not suggesting or implying that Elon Musk or anyone who has launched these satellites, that they themselves are the culprits, but it's something that people need to be aware of. We have, you know, more than 46,000, because Telesat launched over 120,000 satellites, OneWeb 648 satellites, SpaceX another 12,000 satellites. Now, this is a phenomenal amount of satellites cluttering up the, you know, the ionosphere, all these zones, and they're not just up there to give you 5G on your telephone. It's not for that reason. And people need to be aware of what they're capable of doing. And I'm not sure so many people really realize that. What's your view on that?
What goes up must come down.
Yeah.
That was an excellent point. We are messing up our planet's diversity of biome.
Exactly.
Right down to our worms and our bugs in the soil, which are all valuable to us in Hawaii.
That's right.
We need this. And we're messing up. So my question and my answers to that, as when I was in Hawaii, I saw the weirdest clouds in the sky. As a pilot of the flower airplanes, I know about weather and clouds and cloud formations and what it means. Since I was in high school, some years ago, they were so proud of the fact that we could see clouds and change the direction of a cyclone or a hurricane. 70 years later, now what are we seeing clouds with? Electromagnetic radiation from lasers? That's what I saw. I saw waves of clouds, likely seeded by radiation, that caused the high winds. That those were real weird high winds, like you would blow a bellows into a furnace. Just in that, basically that area, at 80 miles an hour, 60, 80 miles an hour winds, gusting, up and down gusting winds. So with what you mentioned, what happens if we mess up our troposphere, our ionosphere? We start changing our jet streams.
That's exactly right. And that's been going on since the Gulf oil spill. Since then, that's been going on. These jet streams, they're changing. And that has huge impact on the normal behavior of the trade winds and our ecology, that the seas, the ocean, the climate.
So,
everything.
So we're messing with the filter. between us and the sun. And what happens if someday we mess with it so much we can't even go outside during the day because the radiation would be too strong? And so we messed up our filter. I mean, if they go that far. But what species of plants would we lose out of that? Would we cut our mosquitoes and our honeybees? Exactly. So important.
Yeah, because insects, are, especially bees and birds, they are actually very electromagnetic sensitive. They have hairs that, you know, are sensitive to those energies. So that's also one of the reasons why there's a mass die-off of bees and birds in many places, because they're hitting these new EMF pulses and fields that are being emitted by this just completely intensely different level of electromagnetic energy and radiation that we're dealing with right now.
The Federation of Indigenous Nations is looking at Lahaina as being our line in the sand. Who better to call on than the Indigenous Nations, who would best understand how to take back and rebuild our ecosystem, our ecosystem, our how to regenerate worms in the soil and no longer use the chemical fertilizers from oil that kill so many microorganisms in our soil and deplete the ability of our plants to produce what our bodies need for nutrients, the electrolytes, the bacterias, the lactobacillus, the enzymes. You know, we're ruining our whole biosystem, as you know. So that's kind of a line in the sand. And I think the Creator, you know, he's very wise. He's calling on the Indigenous Nations. If you don't stand up, I got nobody else. The Indigenous Nations don't come forward. Who else am I going to call on? I mean, I looked at Lahaina like I would envision Sodom and Gomorrah. The pictures I saw of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. All the lives that were lost when that atom bomb was struck. I mean, that's kind of what I saw. Brought tears to my eyes, you know, just seeing this, thinking of the children, what they must have gone through before they finally succumbed to the flames. You know, just unbelievable. Totally opposed to the spirit of aloha that we're losing here in Hawaii.
Absolutely. So what can people do to reach out to you? And, you know, if they want to, if they're interested in helping you, like, as you said, you're actually willing to train people and transfer your knowledge to others so that they can treat and help people. Then we've got the, you know, the tribunal you would like to set up for Lahaina to have a public investigation and inquest, not just independent of the government. So how can people step forward and join forces with you? How can they contact you to do this?
Yes, we don't have a website set up yet. We're working on it. We're starting with a blog. And we've got to get the word out. We have to.
So is it okay if people use your email? Can they email you, first of all?
Say again?
Is it okay if people can email you, first of all? Would you like to share your email?
Well, yes, that would be the best way, yeah, because you know, I'm working with patients, so I can't pick up the phone. And email, I mean, my email is already so backed up. We need people like you yourself to get the word out. We need a central place where people can come for information. We can collect more funds for the Federation of Indigenous Nations to share with the people like Lahaina. We would love to have a Federation of Indigenous Nations radio station going 24/7. playing our aloha music, the powwow music, all kinds of different, you know. But then interspersed, we would have news broadcasts, what's going on in Lahaina, what's going on in with the fires in British Columbia and all of the Native American woodlands that are being destroyed, you know, different Native American issues need to come forward.
Could you talk a little bit about the kind of medicine that you do? Because if people want to help you and work with you, they need to understand a bit about what it is in terms of frequency medicine.
Yeah, you hit it. Right. Yeah, it's right. Frequency medicine or light medicine is what I would call it. I had gone back, like in the movie Back to the Future. I've gone back into the old ways of the medicine men because I'm Cherokee, and I'm learning the old ways and bringing that forward into modern technologies, the spirit of that type of medicine, where the vibration from a drug could heal someone, could rest your spirits. Chanting from the medicine man and using certain vowels and syllables they knew would also help. So I have what's called a med bed that has wires running off of it. But it's not a medical bed so much as it's a meditational bed, so that you're meditating right down to the cellular level, so that I can bring your body back to what cranial sacral people do, the doctors, what they call zero point. So your old traumatic PTSD type memories, we can bring those back to a zero point, erase them slowly, and bring back good memories that you had. Clear back to when you were in the womb.
Yeah.
Clear back to when you were first born. Memories of having a loving mother and father that so needed. So, well, everything in this world is a frequency. So when I ask for a urine sample, a blood sample, and a hair sample, I'm tapping into your signature frequency through Earth Mother. No matter where you are in the world, I can read your body and what it's doing, telepathically maybe, but it all comes through Earth Mother's magnetic field. As long as I am lined up with their magnetic fields, I can tell you, and I'll call you up and let you know, you said you quit smoking. I know you smoked a cigarette last week. It's right here in your blood sample. I mean, that frequency is here. So we're taking the old medicine man. I can remember the movie, Sean Connery, the medicine man. So, yeah, he was right there in the Amazon, climbing up in the canopy of trees, way up in the air, saving sacred flowers. And so tobacco was what the medicine man and the chiefs put in their portable altars, their peace pipes, you know, sweet grass and sage. But those all have valuable frequencies. Tobacco was a medicine way before it became sold by Lucky Strikes and the addictive chemicals put into them to keep you addicted. So tobacco will get rid of the snake venom that's in the COVID stuff. So that's in one of the tinctures I use, the frequency of tobacco itself. So I'm developing a meditational bed that plugs into Earth Mother, so you're getting negative ions from the Earth, just like you would if you were out in the ocean. All of your bodies are batteries, They have a negative and a positive. When your body oxidizes, it's losing its negative charge. When I place you on the bed, I'm hooking you into earth mother, and your body's batteries are recharging with all those negative ions. They don't need any more positive ions. And Earth Mother has billions and billions of negative ions to give away. She has an excess.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's maybe a brief description of modern day medicine.
Yeah, that gives people a good overview of what you do and what they have the opportunity to learn from you. So going back to, this is the first helping of the Call of the Drum podcast, Awakening the First Nations. What is your goal with this podcast?
Well, it's another form of the sound of the drum. We're just using technology again to amplify a dream that a person had miles and miles away in British in Alberta, Canada. So that's what I call the drum. Getting the word out. What we said today is a lot of educational things in it.
Okay.
Besides the awareness, you know, we hope that it'll get out, that this will just be the forerunner of many sub podcasts on the same theme, where we are rebuilding Lahaina. Here's what we just did.
So you're going to let people know in your community, this is a way of letting them know, as well as reaching out to the Indigenous people of other nations for the Federation of Indigenous Nations. And do you hope to bring other guests onto this show in the future?
Probably the most important thing that we want this podcast to do as it grows, is to share with the world our aloha spirit. Aloha is two syllables. Aloha means to gather, or just two people meeting, to gather in an assembly, to share the ha, the second syllable. The ha is the breath of the Creator. So as we meet, even on this podcast, we're sharing the breath of the Creator. Hawaii is a lighthouse of that breath, and that breath is a beacon of hope to all of the nations. And we want that to get out to the Cherokee, to the Choctaw, to the Ascension, to the 300 nations alone that are in Alaska. That needs to get shared, and that might also be a theme for our podcasts. That's probably the most important thing. The scripture comes to mind, return to me and I will heal your land. And I think maybe the Creator took off his hand there in Maui for some reason and allowed the evil, the beast, the devil to do his worst. And he did. We want to bring his hand of protection back. We want the Creator to hold the city of Lahaina in the hollow of his hand, protected. So, with that.
Okay, so that's just beautiful. Thank you so much, Dr. Three Rivers. And is there anything else you would like to add before we wrap up?
No, I think that would give everybody more than enough to think about. And I would say, how does Dr. Spock live long and prosper?
Well, prosper. And,
aloha nui loa means till we meet again. May the breath of the spirit be with you.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you so much, Dr. Three Rivers. And people will be able to contact you by your email, which will be in the description next to the podcast along with this show. We'll also do a video version to mirror the podcast. And if everybody can share everything that Dr. Three Rivers has shared with you today, he has been to Lahaina, he has witnessed and seen for himself everything at Ground Zero. please do get the word out. And if you would like to help, contact Dr. Three Rivers. Thank you very much.
Call it the Drum, Awakening the First Nations.
Aloha everybody, welcome back to the channel. Today's video is not going to be typical of what I usually do, where I talk about sarangs. There's been something that's been pretty heavy going on Maui, and I'm sure you folks have all heard. But that's what I'm going to be talking about today. This is me at work. There was a big fire on August 8th. And this is the ninth, the next night, going into the early mornings of the 10th. I actually came in 14 hours early to start my shift, so a total of 62 hours. The guy before me was running rugged all day during the fire. He's on for, I believe, about 32 hours and no sleep. So I came in to relieve him, to give him a little bit of rest. Lots of stories from him that you wouldn't believe. Questioning himself about certain decisions he's made and whether it saved lives or didn't save lives. Driving through the fire and wondering if he was going to survive. Pretty crazy stuff. He said there were people walking around with second and third degree burns, full of soot, looking like zombies. My first glimpse of Lahaina after the fire was actually at nighttime, and I could barely see much of the destruction. He sees a bunch of down power lines and some burned structures, but for the most part it didn't look too bad until morning came around. I ran a bunch of calls, didn't get any sleep, and the sun started coming up, and this is me driving through the area.
That's all still there. This side is all burned down. Church is still good. Still some smoldering buildings over there.
This is kind of where the edge of the fire was. On the left side, there are some new buildings that were coming up that wasn't touched. Oh, on the right side here, there was a bunch of older industrial buildings. Some were burned, some were spared.
You can see the path of the fire just kind of went through here and down the hill.
All the black areas that you see here is scorched from the fire. Usually it's dry grass in this area.
So this is all up Lahaina Luna. Looks like all these houses survived.
Unfortunately, this fire also affected a bunch of my co-workers. Three of them lost their houses, and one of them actually lost their lives.
So all the hardest hit areas was all closed off, so couldn't drive through it and show you guys what it really looks like. This is all the outskirt damage.
At this point, I was leaving Lahaina. I wasn't sure if I was going to get to come back, but I do come back and I get to go through one of the main roads of Lahaina, and you'll see the wreckage. This is about 2 in the afternoon now, and I'm coming back into Lahaina on the main road that goes into the city there. That's the first road that goes into Front Street. As you can see, it's blocked off. It's hard to see, but on the left side, usually there would be houses that's visible from this area, but they're gone, they're leveled. And what's weird to me is look at all these trees that are still standing within all these houses that were reduced to rubble. It makes no sense to me. There are so many things about this quote-unquote wildfire that just don't make sense. I have a video that I can't show here, but it's of a cat, and it's in a walking position on all fours, but it's dead. It's basically like a statue. The hairs are still on there. but it basically died like instantly, and it just stayed in that position, which is really weird that it wouldn't fall down. That doesn't make sense in a regular fire, does it? I also have another video that I wish I could show you, but I can't and I won't, and God, I don't think I can even talk about it. But just something that doesn't make sense. Isn't it so bad that we can't talk honestly and openly about certain things that we might face repercussions or something in the future? Folks, the truth is out there. The evidence is there. And you guys got to go out and look at it and make a decision of what you think and whether you think there's something going on here that isn't normal. Try to pay attention to all the trees that are still standing amongst all these flattened houses. The temperatures that it takes to melt and crumble these houses should easily burn down trees, correct?
Wow. Incredible. It's a bad nightmare. You just wish you could close your eyes and open them back up and you're just waking up to a regular day. Pretty incredible.
Go ahead.
Gas station.
EMS 1 to AMR Transport Unit, may you there?
For me,
County,
this is Tony.
This is County. We're just wondering your ETA, since someone's waiting for the rig.
On the left would have been a row of stores, probably two stories, and it's just gone. Crumbled. That's should have been a gas station here. Then across the street, still on the left side, is a bank that would have been there.
That used to be Kaiser Permanente.
I mean, everything is gone, both left and the right side. But look at all those trees. Still standing, leaves on the trees are still there.
The sugarcane train, it's still there and standing. Apple's still standing. Everything else around it is demolished.
On the right side were a bunch of stores and restaurants and like surfboard rentals, and they're just unrecognizable now. From here, most of the structures are intact, but what is strange are some of the structures in the middle of this where you can't see from this view, they were gone too.
The people just walking around with their suitcases, nowhere to go. There's a little cat in there.
On the left side of this traffic light is Lahaina Cannery Mall, and that was almost untouched, pretty much all intact. And on the right side is Lahaina Gateway Center, also untouched. But right past these two malls, if you went straight there, there's another community, Wahikuli area, that's completely gone too.
Somehow all of this survives.
I just want to end this video by saying, don't take any day for granted. Go home, hug your loved ones, be thankful for what you have, and please send help and donations to Maui. We can use anything and everything you can spare to give. Also, send your love, because that's the only way we're getting through this. Much mahalo. Aloha.
That's what everybody wants to be, is on TV. Come stand with the people. You guys' job and obligation is to serve the people of Hawaii, to ensure that we still stay in this place we call home.
This is a lawsuit that was put on you yesterday at 4:35 p.m.
Oh, thank
it's
you.
It's a quorum rental that's supposed to be limiting your powers, questioning the validity of this entire group. People from Lahaina sent you this quorum rental, yet you still feel like it's okay to sit here and talk about programs and housing and how much money you guys lost.
And I'm actually speaking to each of you sitting around this table. Is your name listed as a stakeholder of any of the redevelopment plans regarding a smart city? I can tell you, Department of Planning, DLNR, DBED, Housing, all of you, all of these agencies, and I'm not saying to you directly, but you're here representing these agencies, therefore, it is your responsibility to tell the truth. Each one of these agencies have signed on as stakeholders for the redevelopment of a smart city in Maui.
Just want to remind you guys that you guys work for us. You guys work for us. I don't know if you guys forget. You know, 1,000 people could come up here and say that they want something. I mean, the way it looks, you guys just go with what is going to further your political career. It's just like we come here to talk about something and then you guys start fighting back with us. You work for us. You don't talk to your boss like that, right? Who talks to their boss like that? Nobody talks to their boss like that. Oh, you can't go talk to him because he got security. Look at Josh Green, how weak man. What happened? I came inside, what? He got to go check his Bevedese? What is going on? He's supposed to
please not that. Let's not do that. This is not that kind of a meeting. It's not a political meeting or a campaign meeting. This is serious business.
You saying that, that is very, that really bothers me. You're not being a waiter. You talk to your boss like that. I'm your boss. And for real, these people, they are your boss. Shame is when you do something behind everybody's back. Enough is enough, huh? No. More screwing over the people of Hawaii. More, you know, how much? And I can say it again. I can talk about Green. That's your guy's leader. He's not even here. He's a guy. He only signs the bill to further his political career. So what is next? He let go for president. And that's what you guys look for. Oh, that's the guy I look up to. The guy who screws everybody over to get to the top.
I've given testimony so many times. And most of the time, it's like this. Backs are turned. People don't listen. You look like you're sleeping. Where's the emotion? Where's your heart? And when you think about these actions, when you think about the work you do, think about all those people, like this guy on his phone right now. It's insulting. It's insulting. Do not forget the people. And Green's actions right there, getting taken out by his handler. Come on, guys. I saw all your faces. I think some of you were shocked too, except for the people whispering in the front. Because he warned you he was going to walk away. You want to know why? Because he never wants to hear our voices. He wants to silence us every time. He does not listen. I am asking all of you at this table to make sure he listens. But we know very well that you guys, as the third largest stakeholders, the state, do want that land and can take it when you deem it a natural disaster. And that is disgusting. And that is why I'm also here today, because someone needs to call that out. We wanted the samples right away. You guys stopped the people from going in.
I know it says on there on the door, there is no placards or no signs, but isn't that very, so much contradictions that you can't have a sign, you can't have a voice. They're like loopholes on paper written by developers and those that are in charge that make the decisions for the state, for the different counties. I've been in this meeting and I've heard developers say the loopholes. They know how to work around it on paper to get things passed through. So Lahaina strong, people over profit. So how we're going to first do this in order to really get anything done for this working group to work, we first need to have the leader, Josh Green, remove himself so that real change can take place.
What all of you have forgotten here, including the governor, who walked out of this office before he could hear public hearing, this emergency proclamation is a fall.
This is about unity, and this is about coming together and fighting for the rights of the people. Climate change does not exist. Okay?
Excuse me. Okay, I appreciate your comments again. I do, but we really need to stick to the items on the agenda. It is 11:10.
I don't care about your agenda. You know what? Your agenda can kiss my ass. Okay?
Have been set. And we're just asking, why is our town burnt down? Why are our families' houses gone? And if you can explain that to us in a logical, reasonable way, we'll accept it. But right now, there is no explanation, yeah. Right? All I see in the newspaper is two sides arguing from what I saw on Civil Rights or whatever that magazine is. Civil Beat. And then the other side was a Guardian putting out stuff. But then I'm hearing stuff on the other side. And I'm like, hey, somebody's spinning this story. People are using this for their advantage politically. Right. And it shouldn't be done.
That's right.
It shouldn't be done at all. Yeah. And that's all I'm saying. Whether they are doing this, they should not be doing this for political use, either on pro-Kanaka side or the other side. We just got to get this thing, and it should be transparency in this. That's okay. All I'm asking. Thank you. We basically want accountability of people who are responsible for this. So we have questions in regards to the electric company, why they never turned off the power that day, and they should be held liable for this. People should be held liable for this because this is gross negligence. This should be standard operating procedure that power should have been turned off. And people's lives have been lost because of that. Fortunately, in my family, we haven't lost anyone immediately, or my cousins and things like that. But many other friends have lost their family members. And so we want accountability of people, that electric company, the police. Why did the police block people from coming and exiting? They had lines of people lined on Front Street. We heard testimony from people on top of Facebook that said, and things that said that basically the police was blocking the road over there by Chart House, and that the lines was not down from Wahikuli yet. And hundreds of people were backed up there with people in their cars, and a lot of people lost their lives, from what I understand. And why is not the police officer that was over there? He should be investigated. That wasn't the only place, Kilauea, Mauka, where Halemaha'olu burnt down. I was told by people who escaped there on foot that the officer had blocked the road. People could not get out. My brother literally had to go cut the chain off of the old sugar mill camp area to let people out at the top of Kilauea Mauka. And that's how people got out, because the roads were all blocked because the police were blocking it. This is what I'm hearing. And we want accountability. It needs to be investigated by a third party that is not associated with the government. That is not associated. Investigators should come in and they should look at this. Right now, there's gross negligence, possibly criminal negligence on this part. We're wondering what's on those documents for FEMA, you know, and I'm like, I don't know what's on the documents myself. And my cousins are asking me what should be signed, what shouldn't be signed. I said, I haven't seen any documents. I don't even know. And we're afraid to sign documents because right after that, the governor says, oh, I'm going to take the land. Right? He's talking about the state wants to purchase all this land and come in and open it for the working class and also work for a memorial and things like that. Who the hell does he think that he should get this land? This land belongs to the people already.
Okay.
The government is liable for this, grossly negligent, at least if not criminally negligent, right? And they should clean up all that land, restore that land to the people who own that, because they failed here. They failed. The government failed.
Okay.
And then the last point is this. The water and the issue with that water, why all that water wasn't coming down that mountain. From what I understand, they had to go ask the kalo farmers up the mountain about that. There's been arguments in Lahaina about water. I'm Hawaiian. I grow kalo. I agree with water being supplied for kalo and all that. But in an emergency, there's no excuse that the water didn't come down that mountain. And that the sea worm held that back. And if Hawaiian families are responsible for that too, because of their pressure on the government, they should be reviewed for that action too. And they shouldn't have to say that they had, to the point where it destroyed all of Lahaina.
Good morning, Leah. Well, Senator Kurt Favela, who's joined with me right now, and other community members will be voicing their concerns for people in Lahaina and sharing those concerns at a press conference happening at the Hawaii State Capitol today at 7 a.m. And he's joining us right now. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So tell us the importance of prioritizing housing for the next few years.
Well, the thing is, right now, everything has changed, right? Priorities should be changing, too. As we move forward, knowing that we need to focus our attention to our families in Lahaina, that's where our attention should be, island-wide. So what I'm asking the governor is to disband his working group, or whatever it's called, to reprioritize and reorganize with the families in Lahaina and what they want to do and how fast they want to have this thing. This should be fast-tracked, not cutting corners, but fast-tracked to the sense of billing Lahaina the way it used to be. And bringing back that legacy of the community, because that was one community. A lot of people don't understand the historicalness of that community. They're very close knit. So I don't want to hear nothing about climate change and global warming and all of these kinds of setbacks, because he's the governor. He can make things happen like that if he wants to. So he has to want to reprioritize his efforts instead of trying to build the 50,000 homes in so many time that he gave.
So this is the Build Beyond Barriers working group.
Yes.
Okay, so if you can make one change to it, because I know it's very broad, what would that be?
One change, disband the whole group and reorganize. They need to prioritize the people in Lahaina. They should be part of the working group, the grassroots effort people there. They should be, the meeting should be there, not here, should be there. And that's what one thing, I mean, I know it's kind of a lot, but that's what I'll ask the governor to do. To disband and reorganize.
We are a voice for the Federation of Indigenous Nations. We call upon all, awakening the First Nations.
Be honored always, O beloved descendants of Hawaii Kula'ili. Let us wear the A'ali'i blossom as we stand united, steadfast and maka'ala. Paddle on together in our pursuits of civil justice, until our dignity is restored.
Oh, composition by Hinale Moana Wong. At the end there, Kula by Moana Akana, that takes us back to Henry Pa in the early 1970s, Kalananapua. Outstanding.
My best friend, Dugu Chögyal Rinpoche, gave me this teaching. It's from the Kalachakra Tantra, and it's about the emergence of the kingdom of Shambhala. And in this particular interpretation by my friend from Teshi Jong, term arises Shambhala warriors. And it's obvious that's a metaphor for the bodhisattva. So as we're looking to how do we be bodhisattvas, this has been a big help to me. Okay, I'll start. There comes a time when all life on earth is in danger. In this time, great powers have arisen, barbarian powers. And although they waste their wealth in preparations to annihilate each other, they have much in common. And among the things they have in common are weapons of unfathomable death and devastation, and technologies that lay waste the world. And it is just in this time when the future of all beings seems to hang by the frailest of threads that the kingdom of Shambhala emerges. Now you can't go there because it's not a place. It exists in the hearts and minds of the Shambhala warriors. And actually, you can't tell a Shambhala warrior by looking at her or him, because there are no uniforms, no insignia, no banners to declare what side you're on, no barricades behind which you can rest and regroup or stand to threaten the enemy, not even any home turf. Because always and ever, you just have the terrain of the barbarian powers to move across. Now the time has come, he said, when great courage is required of the Shambhala warriors. Moral courage and physical courage. Because they're going to go into the very center of the barbarian powers to dismantle their weapons. And weapons in every sense of the word. They're going to go into the pits where the armaments are made and where they're deployed, also going into the corridors of power where the decisions are made, and dismantle those weapons too. Now he said, Joanna, mark this. The Shambhala warriors know that they can dismantle these weapons because they are mano maya. That means mind made. They are made by the human mind, so they can be unmade by the human mind. Because these instruments of death are not visited upon us by some extraterrestrial force or some satanic deity or some unalterable predestined fate, but they arise from our choices, from our lifestyles. Actually, he didn't say the word lifestyle. Our choices, our habits, our relationships. So these dangers arise are manomaya, mind-made. So they can be unmade by the human mind. And so he said, now is the time when the Shambhala warriors go into training. Or you want to say, how do they train? And he said, they train in the use of two weapons. And actually, he did say the word weapons, though I think you might prefer to say tools or implements or resources. That's what he said. What are they, I asked. And he held up his hands the way the lamas hold the ritual objects in the great dances of his people. And he said, one is compassion, and the other is insight into the radical interdependence of all phenomena. And you need both. One is not enough. You need the compassion because that provides the fuel to move you out to where you need to go to do what you need to do. And what it boils down to is not being afraid of the suffering of our world. And when you're not afraid of the pain, then nothing can stop you, you know. But by itself, that's so hot, that fuel. Ooh, that can burn you out. And so you need the other. You need that insight into the radical interexistence of all things. And with that, you know, that this is not a battle between the good guys and the bad guys, but that the line between good and evil runs through the landscape of every human heart. And that we are so interwoven in the web of existence that even the smallest act with clear intention has repercussions through the web that you can't begin to see, let alone measure. But that, while essential, is a little cool, he said. Little cool, feel a little abstract, and so you need the heat of the compassion. And as he said that, my mind flashed to in the puja hall, the monks chanting, and often as not, they're chanting with moving hand gestures. You've seen them probably in person or on film. And often as not, they're dancing the interplay between compassion and wisdom.
Kai ko o ka mo wa na kai lana nei Hawaii nau e we a halulu ka honua a haumea na kulu kulu e ka lani ki e ki e kaumai luna aue ke aloha ole akamali hini.
Auhea vale o kopu alikoa o ke ave.
Me ko kamala la valula me ka kuhi heva.
Alumai pu alumai me ko mano kalani po.
Ka i mai ana me na kama ka hele lani.
Kuha a he.
Ka kahiaka o na o bibi
aeinu vai ava ava he vivo ole a hoku pa a o he hope ho i mai ai ana i vale no ka ko ka u ko e mau i ke ala au e ke aloha ole a ka malihini e lei mau i lei mau ka ko e na mamo aloha i lei vehi a ali i vehi nani o ku aina hoea mau, hoea mau no ka pono si vila a hoi hoi hou ia mai ke ku o koa
kuha a he
I all love.